Remember when we all used to have our best friend's landline phone numbers memorized? If I had to, I probably could still call at least three people's parents' houses. Not sure what good that would do me today, but that data is logged into my brain. And I'm realizing, slowly but surely, that odd space in my mind is being replaced. Not with other seven-digit phone numbers, because, if I'm being honest, I still occasionally actually have to look up even Francesco's cell phone number, which I should really commit at least that one to memory. But, no. Instead, the memory space is now full of Instagram accounts. Not always the names of the actual makers behind those accounts, but just the account name or handle itself. It's a little weird, but it can also be freeing for some people because it means that you can choose how much of yourself you want to share. You can create kind of an alter ego of sorts, not a dishonest representation of yourself. I'm not suggesting we all start catfishing the makers community here. But instead, what I mean is a comfort zone for what you share publicly and what you choose to keep to yourself privately. And how building a brand name that can help you create a bit of that gap between the two, private and public. This, of course, also means that what we all experience as consumers online is not always the full story of what is happening in real life for any maker, which is the big question I've had for Kim Ferguson of Chaos Creates for a long time. Between seeing snippets of a wholesale jewelry line and hearing about her acceptance into a local residency, not to mention, until this recording, I had no idea she was balancing all of this alongside a full-time job. Understanding what life actually looks like is exactly why I started this very podcast. So, of course, I am excited for you to hear Kim's story this week, where we shed a bit of light on the difference between the Instagrammable Chaos Creates and the lovely human that is Kim. And we'll dig into all of that after a quick word from our sponsor.
Hello, I'm Jeff, Executive Vice President here at Amoco Brent. Over 100 years ago, my grandfather founded Amoco. Today, my brother and I carry on his legacy. Our team works diligently to bring you the best clays, glazes, equipment, and more for your studio and a classroom. This week's episode is brought to you by Amoco Brent. Please find your favorite Amoco or Brent product at your local distributor today. Thank you for choosing Amoco for all your clay and glaze needs.
Now, on with the show. Welcome to the Maker's Playbook, the show where we talk all about what it's really like to make a living from the things you make. I'm your host, seasoned entrepreneur of 13 years, Rebecca Ikis-Cara. Well, hey, Kim, welcome to the podcast.
I'm excited.
We're here. You know what's so funny is we've been talking about doing this for so long and each of us had to reschedule and whatnot. And it's fascinating how the timing wound up because I feel like somebody's looking out for us because the timing now is like you're on the mountaintop. You just had your show. You just got engaged. I mean, the timing feels really, really nice.
Yeah, it's definitely well aligned. I can say that for sure. There's a lot going on. Lots to talk about.
I'm benefiting from the glow that I can see coming off of you, even though nobody else is going to be able to see that in their headphones. But you're just like...
Just hear the glow. That's right.
Right? I love it. Well, for people who don't know who I'm looking at, how would you introduce yourself?
Well, my name is Kim. My pronouns are she, her. And I am a sculptor, mostly. majority of that work is ceramic. So I make a lot of whimsical sculptures. That's kind of my thing. And my practice is called Chaos Creates. And basically, you know, the idea is to take all of the madness in my life and channel it into a positive direction and hopefully share that message with other people who it connects with. So that's a little bit about me.
That's like the strongest intro. The vision that you get from your name through to what you're making in your aesthetic is such a... How long did it take you to come up with... Did that just come out from the very beginning? Because that's...
Oh, did I just have it all together from the beginning? Yeah, totally.
I just mean, thinking through your aesthetic, all of that aligns so much that I... didn't necessarily put those dots
together.
So like,
which one came first, right?
Yeah.
No, so definitely the chaos part came first. I found art as a way to like as therapy for whatever craziness was going on in my life. And I just thought about like, I'm very in tune with nature. It's a big part of what makes me happy. And so when I think of chaos, I'm thinking of things like volcanic eruptions that create new land that's really fertile versus like land that was there before. So just thinking about what's that silver lining that I can take out of this really negative moment that I'm experiencing in my life? Mm. And somehow pottery always just helped me work through that. It came from the idea first and then the practice came afterwards, but it's always been chaos from the get.
That's amazing because my brain was being very like lame about chaos in terms of I don't know, the chaos of our physical space, right? Like of a studio or... the chaos of all of the ideas in your head, or I don't know. My definition was not as cool as what your actual mission is. So.
My thought process, yes. Yeah, I mean, it's just about getting you thinking about what that means for you, because it's different for everyone. I hear that a lot when they figure out it's like chaos. They're like, oh, you mean like bad things? I'm like, sure, if that's how you see that.
If that's what brought you here to start, but maybe there's room to grow. Yeah. I do have to admit that your Instagram handle is one of those that is so strongly lodged in my brain that about 6 months ago or so, I realized I didn't actually know your first name.
I think you said that to me. And you know what? I'm so happy you brought that up. I would totally go by Chaos Creates. I'm so down for everyone knowing me as that. We could just forget Kim. Kim is like the private person. That's me being all shy and whatever. But as you can tell from my Instagram feed, that is where I'm allowed myself to really be expressive. So it's fine. Like you're like, I felt like I want to call you Chaos Creates. That's cool.
Before I said, hey, Kim, welcome to the podcast, I like paused and was like, don't call her Chaos. Don't call her.
I'm so fine with it. Like, it's a Freudian slip. Honestly, like we all kind of refer to each other, even people that you meet in person after meeting them through social media, like we still kind of refer to each other in the social media terms. It's kind of interesting how that's changed how we identify with even people who are our friends now, you know what I mean? So it's kind of...
Exactly. It's just a weird psychosis, but in terms of being a small business owner, as a brand, it's a positive reflection of the fact that you are curating and creating such a strong presence on the internet that it has lodged firmly into my psyche.
In people's mind. Yeah. Hopefully it's a good space. It's like a purple spot in your brain and you just vibe in there.
Yep. It is definitely purple. There are occasionally some like sunshine rainbows happening. Definitely plants. And a smirky face next to one of those plants.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you got me down pat, man.
I mean, the bone structure that you create out of a planter is just, I mean, that is sculptural. There's no, it's just like, it's so subtle. You're not changing the shape of the planter on its own, but just adding this face to it that is so strong. And yet, you know, because it is still the shape of a planter.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. All right. Tell us a little bit before I get into the residency and everything now on Monstera plants and jewelry and all kinds of things. Tell us a little bit about what got you to this point and to having a residency.
Oh, okay. So let's see. I started ceramics in college just as a fluke class, take off some of the stress from basically heading towards law school. And I fell in love with it. It was just a really fun medium for me. My first class, actually, they made us do teapots all year long. And I absolutely detested that. Yeah, it was terrible. I hated it.
Who starts with a teapot?
Listen, I had the quirkiest teacher and I love him to death, but he was very much like, if you figure this out, you can do anything else. So I'm going to throw the worst thing at you and then you figure it out. But the one thing that he did do that was like awesome for me is that he said it doesn't need to be functional. So that gave me that space to explore all the sculptural work that I really was more interested in rather than, you know, functional teapots. So it started with that. And like I said, I didn't take it seriously. I was going to law school and just the stress of even going through that process later on in life, I was like, okay, let me find something to de-stress a little bit. And I found a local pottery studio, really connected with, you know, the studio owner, and got right back into pottery. And that was like, what, a 5-year gap in between then or something like that. So I took some time off in between my clay obsession, but it always comes back to me whenever I have like a big depressive state or something, like I have a terrible breakup or, you know what I mean, or a big move in my life. And so that's, like I was saying before, the practice comes from these great ruptures in my life where I'm like, okay, how do I channel this? How do I process into something positive, into that next stage, basically? So all of that was me processing into the next stage of doing the residency and really actually believing myself that I'm an artist and not a lawyer at this point in my life somehow.
I was just going to ask, so how long, so you finished law school, like were you practicing?
No.
No, you didn't.
Okay. No. So I went and got my master's degree, trying to figure out if I wanted to do law school. I did all the prep, took the LSAT, all that, and I just never decided to move forward with it. I was like, you know, if at some point it comes to me, then cool. But it was really draining. I wanted to be a litigator since I was like 11. It's like, it was like a long term. I chose a high school that had a law program. It was like a whole long life plan.
Wait, what high school has a law program? Where did you grow up?
There's one here in South Florida where they have a pre-law magnet. So they teach you all of the, you know, like the legal background, mock trial and all of that fun stuff. So
I mean, I watched Matlock when I was like, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer because I liked Matlock when I was like fifth grade. Like, what 12-year-old likes Matlock? I don't know. I'm weird. That's fine. But there was no pre-law at my high school. I mean, dang. Okay. All right. Cool.
But yeah, no, I specifically chose that school for that reason. You know what I mean? I was very determined even that in that moment. That's where I wanted to go. That's how I could see myself creating a sustainable life. I never looked at my artistic skills as anything more than these are some natural talents you have and they're, you know, for you to enjoy. And that's it. I never looked at it as you could live from that, you know?
Yep, totally. I feel like I make the assumption that in part it's so much of what we were or weren't shown as kids, right? Like you tell an older family member you're going to be a lawyer and it's like, oh yeah, go, like that's a secure thing, that's safe, that's impressive, it looks good, whatever. You tell somebody, hey, I want to go be a painter, and they're like, maybe.
The eyebrows go up. They're like, what?
How do I put this nicely? Are you sure? Yeah.
Right.
And it's interesting because it's such a common story, I feel like, for so many of us, that we were like, okay, let me go do something that's going to be safe. And then ultimately we get to a point where we go,
you still get pulled back to it. You still get pulled back. That's where you're supposed to be. You know what I mean?
So give me a little bit more of the timeline just to make sure that I get my, like, my mental calendar correctly. When did you like take the LSAT and make this shift realizing like, all right, this isn't going to be it?
That was around 2015.
Okay.
But I took the LSAT and I was getting prepared to go to school. And I was like, actually, you know what? Let me take a break and go and get my master's degree. And after getting my master's, that was like another 2 years after or something like that. After getting my master's degree, I was like, oh, the world is open of all these other potentials of me being able to use these skills that I had prepared for with law. You know, my master's was in public policy. So I was like, I could this, you know, like all of that training can still go into something else. And yeah, I was just kind of exploring, you know, like you're in your early 20s. I feel like people should really explore all the different types of careers they might be interested in, even if it's just like a little bit, you know, just to see if it's something that, you know, will stick. And I think that's what I was doing. I was exploring in that time period where I was like, should I go to law school and spend $1 million?
A master's is fine. Like that's just a casual program.
No, well, that one I was able to get that paid for through my employer. So, like, thankfully, that was a smarter decision. But
That's good. Right. I was like, when somebody says they're going to take a break, I don't expect the next sentence after that to be, so I got a master's. We are so on the same wavelength, though.
I still have to do something. That's funny. Yoga?
I don't know.
I have very strict, high-standard Caribbean parents, okay? Yoga alone was not going to cut it.
I love it. I love it. So then you were working while you were getting your master's. So that's been already like 8 years ago-ish, years ago. So at that point, did you kind of already get Chaos Creates? Was that kind of like a side hustle in the background you were making and playing around? Or what's that been like since?
That has just been like, that was me going back into the studio, really, that time period after. I was just back into the studio. The owner actually got really frustrated with me because I would never keep anything to fire. I just wanted to get back with the clay. You know what I mean? I just wanted to get reacquainted. And I did that for months. It drove him insane. He's like, you're not firing anything. But anyway. And during that time, it was still for me Chaos Creates because that's just like my artistic persona, like I say. But I think in 2019, after all of us were, you know, home for a little while and we were dealing with a lot of the like racial things that were happening in America, that was a huge time for resurgence of Black artists, and especially on social media. And that for me was like a huge drive behind being like, yeah, no, share this. People are home. Like they connect with what you are working on. And I never saw it as a business. It was just like, this is what I'm doing in my free time. Here it is. Enjoy. Nothing was edited. Nothing was, you know, curated. Very different from what my page is like right now. But I was just like, here, look at the things, you know. I had 12 people who would watch my stuff. And I'm like, you guys are cool. I appreciate you.
This is the part people forget. Everybody has started with 12 people looking at their stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
People seem to forget, like, oh, they just went off into the races. And it's like, but you, in a certain way, I'm comforted when there's less people because it gives you the space to try something new, to get a little bit better at it, to get a little bit like I don't want 10,000 people the first time I make a reel. Are you kidding me? That reel was not good.
We talked about that. Yeah, the idea of slow growth and being prepared for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, even now I'm still balancing my ceramic practice with a full-time job. So, you know, that would be a lot of pressure having so many people all of a sudden now be so interested in your art, something that is so labor intensive that, you know, you can create in limited batches and all this. So it's automatically a situation where you're not able to meet that demand. So yeah, we talked about that. I really, really think it's important. You know, if you're going to develop a certain style, or if you're like me and you can't pick exactly what your niche is or what you want to do, you want the freedom to be able to like test out different things. Yeah, that's a good benefit too.
I'm glad that you just mentioned you still have a full-time job and your practice, because this is also, in a certain way, you are so good about protecting. I feel like from the outside looking in, you seem to protect how much you share on Instagram in a healthy way, you know, to where I've been following you for a long time and I'm like, I don't know if she is full time or not. Well, we were just joking before this. I didn't even know you were dating anybody. And then all of a sudden I open up my stories to this beautiful bling and I was like, hold up, what? Like, did you go on one date and get engaged? What happened? Like, you know,
basically, yeah. Yeah. And you know what? To be honest with you, had it not happened at my art show opening, I don't know that I would have shared that with my art community that quickly and even in that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But they happened together and there's literally no, I've been trying all week to separate them. I really have. But it's like, why? They're two beautiful moments celebrating something awesome for you. Take it. You know what I mean? So
I think a lot of people will also be comforted realizing they can have an online presence without having to overshare. You know, like you have created this space that has like, I remember the handle. I remember, like, I can tell you your aesthetic and all of this stuff that I remember so well. But at the same time, you didn't need to like give the world all of Kim to do it. You know,
that's awesome. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I'm a very private person. Honestly, any of my fellow makers that I've met in real life, like, you're completely different from your like online persona. Yes, I'm super quiet. I am very different. I'm very reserved initially. So I think online, it gives me a little bit more freedom with my brand. You know, there's an exact story. There's an exact identity that I want to connect with when I'm working on my online persona. And it's me, but it's not all of me. And it doesn't need to be all of me to connect with people who feel that, who feel the message, you know? So that's kind of how I've been able to do that. Plus, on the other side of things, I've been doing social media for, I want to say, like the last 6 or 7 years before I was doing plus size modeling. And that was very invasive for someone who is like so private like that, you know. So I learned from that and applied it to my ceramic practice of like, they don't need to really see any of that.
See, and this is what's fascinating is because so many of us can feel like, oh, I wish I would have started this sooner. I would be farther along if I had committed, whatever. But no, like that experience that you had before ceramics has informed like your ability to do social media for ceramics is stronger because of a completely separate experience.
So different, like so out of left field. When I tell people that, they're like, you used to do what? I have to send the pictures to prove, yes, this happened.
You can send them to me later. But this is what's so funny is I feel like we have talked for so long and there's still so many things that I was like, I'm not sure. I have questions because I've heard you mention some wholesale accounts. I think with your ceramic jewelry, you've got a residency going on, but you're still managing a full-time job. So like, tell us what other 5 other things am I missing? Because I'm sure there's other things.
Living a life, trying to drink enough water, you know, like good exercise, you know.
Right.
So, okay. So to be completely transparent and honest with that, it's been so difficult balancing all those things. I mean, you know, this is the kind of the life, the less glamorous side of that. It does sometimes mean like I get less sleep or, you know what I mean? Like something has got to give because I'm only one person. And so last year, in between trying to take on, you know, art teaching jobs and new art opportunities and the residency and wholesale, just all of that, last year was about me saying yes, about me being open to all of these opportunities to grow my brand. And I was just overcommitting, to be completely honest with you. You know, I'd overcommit and it ran me into the ground because I was not willing to allow any of those balls to fall. I was like, I will just run myself into the ground. It'll be fine. I'll be okay. And I was not. You know what I mean? So when I got the opportunity to do the residency, I knew that my featured month would be in February. And so I felt the burnout, all that. And I was like, you know what? It's probably best for me to take a break before my featured month so I can prepare for all of the ramp up that's going to happen. And thankfully, I was able to get, you know, some leave from my full-time job so I could actually focus just on artwork. Because otherwise, none of this would have been as good as it was.
That makes me feel a little bit better. Because I was like, hold up, how are you starting a residency and working full-time? Like, what?
Yeah, no, it's a lot. And I've gone back to work now. And thankfully, like I said, the ramp up period of doing everything to prepare for the show is over. But even going back in these last couple of weeks, I'm like, how can I grow my business and be at this other job? And you know what I mean? So I'm still back in that place of like, how do I make the bridge between full-time entrepreneur and, you know, where I'm at right now?
It's a rough bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that I feel like, especially with American culture, we can get so pulled into the workaholism so quickly that even if you fully cross the bridge, right, even if you're full time, when there's a period of time where you got used to working at such a level, it's really easy to stay in that space when it's not sustainable because.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when it is your own business, when there isn't a marketing department and a finance department and an IT department and like you have to do all that, it's like, well, you know, it's only going to be like this for now because we're just getting started. I'll work less once we hit whatever goal.
Some goal. Then, yeah. Some goal that you end up moving anyway.
Yeah.
I totally get you. Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about how the resident, like, what's the residency? How's it work? Where are you?
So it's actually a very exciting residency for me because it's housed in a very historical building. It's called the Bailey Hotel here in South Florida. And we celebrated 100 years since the building has been open. And so it has a lot of historic roots in this city. And I remember like once I graduated college, I was looking for like fun things to do back at home, in, you know, in my hometown. And one of the things they had was a lyrics lab, like a open mic night poetry song kind of thing. So it's always been known as this very artsy, like, you know, cultural place. And so during the pandemic, I was looking for places to have my studio and I decided to commit to a specific place for my practice. And I checked these you know, these folks here out, but they were closed like most places for the pandemic. But thankfully, the lady at the front desk, she's like, oh, well, we're going to have a new set of residences come in the next year and all of that. So she told me about it and I jumped on it immediately. I applied. All I had were plant pots and I didn't know if the plant pots qualified as the type of art that they may have been looking for. So all my sculptures were like super old from college and I hated them. But I applied and, you know, it's basically a residency that's through the city where it's 8 of us that are in this class. And each month of the residency, we are each featured in our own way based on what it is that our medium is. So we each get an opportunity to do press kits. We do photos for stuff, you know, like everything supportive in terms of, you know, getting you to fill any gaps you may already not fill with what your practice is currently doing. So the cool thing is there's so many different like versions of us here where there's artists who are painters. There's ones who are sculptors like myself, a mosaic artist. Like we're all so varied. And so it has been really inspiring, really been pushing me even to get outside of just ceramics. I'm like, what else can I sculpt? You know what I mean? Just because everyone else around me is stepping outside of their comfort zone. And that's really what residencies, I personally think, are supposed to do. It's supposed to be that time period where you're challenging yourself in a new way or you're focused on a very specific type of work. You know what I mean? Whatever it may be, I think there should be a focus for it. And so for me, it's about the experimentation.
Cool. It sounds to me like there's an intentionality around keeping the group small, keeping the mediums diverse. And so is there programming where they're bringing all of you together? And how formal is it, I guess, is what I'm curious about. Because I feel like they run the gamut.
It's super formal. So we have like monthly meetings and everything like that. We're encouraged to cross collaborate. At the end of the residency, we will have a group show showcasing all of our pieces, which is kind of interesting because one of us is a dance artist. It's going to be wild in terms of how a dancer interprets one, you know, idea versus a sculptor or a painter. So it has been structured pretty well considering this is the newest iteration of their residency program. And the focus on keeping it small, I think, is really thoughtful because then you actually are able to develop a relationship with the other people in your residency. We have specific times where we meet because it's like we're all going to be in the space at that time. We have group events that happen on a monthly basis that we all are in our studio for at that time. So it's very much community-based, very much, you know, sharing and all of that stuff that they want usually to happen in a residence. And sometimes it can happen where people are just like off doing their own thing.
Well, and part of why I was asking that was thinking about the fact that you are now balancing this with a full-time job, which I think is actually really encouraging because so many of the other residencies I read about or hear about or see grants for are very much like pick up your whole life and move somewhere else and somehow have funding for a year of your life that, you know, straight out of college could have worked maybe. But now,
but not with real bills.
Like, like the ramen hits differently at 36 than it did at 20.
Yeah, totally like,
can't do that. Can't.
No, I totally understand that. Yeah. No, I mean, so they've been flexible in that they've taken on full-time artists and, you know, people who are hobbyists turning into full-time. And so in terms of the flexibility, we are required to be here at least 6 hours while the public can come in and check out our spaces. I wish I could show you. I'll have to show you at some point. But like, basically, we have like 3 walls and one of the walls is a window so everyone can look in on what you're doing. And I lovingly
Doesn't make you feel like a fish at all.
I'm a little bit like a zoo animal. It feels a little bit like that. Just a bit, you know. But for the most part, the community has been really awesome in terms of like respecting my space, you know.
I was going to say, I go back and forth. Like on the one hand, it's nice that the glass is there because then somebody can't just like come up and watch over your shoulder like awkwardly close. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if the glass wasn't there, it would maybe feel less like a fishbowl.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. That's basically, I have curtains and everything. I'm like, nope, please don't bother me. Not right now. Otherwise, it's been beautiful. I mean, it's really been pushing me out of my comfort zone, not just with like the medium that I'm working with, but with people. Like I said, I'm naturally very shy and this is forcing me to be in the public eye in the community. It's kind of helping me hone those skills and not be so anxious when meeting folks. So, I mean, I can do it for classes. Like, it's that to me, it's like, it's a job, switch that brain on and like do your class. It's not a problem. But like, when it's just me talking about my own stuff, I'm like, I don't know what to say. So it's been helpful in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so much easier to like hype somebody else up rather than hype, at least for me. Like, I can hype somebody else up more than I can hype myself up, which people are going to be surprised by because they hear me pitch things all the time. And I'm like, yeah, that's all just practice. Like, that's not, you don't have to be a...
That's like, out of necessity, I learned how to be good at this. I get you.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. Well, so talk to me a little bit about what Chaos Creates has looked like recently and maybe dreams of moving forward, because I've seen you mention wholesale. I've seen the jewelry and the planters and kind of, I guess, first, is the dream to move it into full time, or is, if you're working in public policy, that's also like a passion, you know, where's kind of that vision, I guess?
Yeah. Where do I want to take it? Yeah. So I want to do art full time, and I'm trying to figure out what that looks like, where I could potentially do like public art, which is a, you know, it's a government position, but then it's also art. So it will marry my two interests. And it wasn't until I saw this residency built through the city that I was like, oh, that's a thing. I had no idea cities still valued art and culture. That's interesting.
Depends on the city.
That's very true. Yes, yes, yes. But, you know, because of that,
we're not going to talk about Florida politics in this moment. We're going to stay far away from that today.
Especially today of all this. Yeah. But yeah, no, I definitely want to do it full time. I feel that's where my passions are lying for the next foreseeable future. And I have tried a few things like wholesale and other things to kind of get myself in a place where my business is consistently making money. But I've really found out, like, especially for someone who makes a physical product, I really think it's important to decide whether your product is a good, like, you know, like a product, or is it an art piece? Are you in between those two spaces? And if you are, it's cool, but it's difficult to decide where to sell your piece. So before, I was looking at it as, it's art, yeah, but it's also functional, so people will buy it. And so I should sell it as a good or a product, right? So it should be wholesaled. I should figure out molds at some point. I should, you know, like, that's where I saw scaling going. And then I really thought about the pieces that made me most happy to make, whether it was mold or just hand making it, it's sculptural work. So some of my later pieces, like the vases that look like women's dresses, those are, to me, I can sell that as an art piece more than I would rather sell it for like a vase. You get what I'm saying? It's a sculpture before it's a vase. The vase is kind of secondary to it. It's cool that this sculpture has a function. That's kind of where I'm taking my approach. So it'll probably be a lot less wholesale stuff, just because the wholesale was driving me insane. It was a lot. Like, I couldn't do it.
When I think about balancing another job on top of an art practice, wholesale is not necessarily that's why I was so intrigued of like, does she have another job? Does she not have another job? Because Francesco and I are interested in wholesale, but that's all he's you know, like, he's in the studio for,
that's it. Yeah.
And so that's where I can see that that's a manageable business model, as opposed to the quantities you have to make that worthwhile in your nights and weekends.
Exactly. 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 So it's like, if I only have 3 or 4 hours, I would rather put those 3 or 4 hours into a sculptural art piece than I would into like 20 earrings. And I love my earrings, don't get me wrong. I wish I had two of me. I say this all the time. I wish I had two of me to do, you know, the functional stuff, like the mugs and the earrings. And then I could just do all the sculptural work. At some point, I do need to bring on an extra pair of hands. But yeah, most small businesses, we just can't. We can't afford to always have that extra support. So it's something I'm hoping for the future. I'm calling it in that I will have, you know, an extra pair of hands that I could hopefully mold or help grow in their pottery practice. But yeah, the idea is that, you know, I'll get more assistance so that my things can be more available. Like those plant mama pots, people fall in love with them, but the wait is like 6 months. And I'm going to be honest with you, it takes a while for me to get a batch of those out. Each one is so different. So with that in mind, I'm like, yeah, my products are more art pieces than they are goods, because they're not consistently the same. You know what I mean? It's not easy to mold something that's going to be like 4 or 5 different iterations of what it is.
I mean, as soon as you were talking about that intersection between art and function, those plant mom and pots is exactly what I was thinking that is like the most physical example I can think of as a blend of those two things together.
Right. Yeah, because it's a plant pot, but it's also not the plant pot you want to put outside in your garden and like just on the ground somewhere. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't want to put a plant that's going to grow downwards in it, right? Because I want to see that face. I want to see that cheekbone structure that's like fantastic. Yeah.
Totally get it.
Only succulents are going
in that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Queen Bee Pottery, she makes some similar like beautiful faces on these vessels. And like, I'm like, if I ever get my hands on one of those, I'm never putting any kind of crazy plant. It's only succulents go in here. I don't even know if I'm putting plants in it. Like, I might put moss. I don't know.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Nope. I'm just thinking about your plant pots now. I don't have a segue question.
That's okay. The only thing we didn't talk about yet is the show. Yeah. We talked about where I want to go. Yeah. That's the only other thing.
Had you put together a show before, or was this the first time you were putting together a show?
This was my first time doing this, and it was so freaking intimidating. Every day I came to the studio, I find imposter syndrome. Seriously. Not just because I hadn't put together a show before, but also because a lot of the work that, and I'll share it soon, but you know, a lot of the work that was in the show was all experimentation, meaning using new medium, you know, using new technique, like completely new, just because this space demanded it. Like, there's more space here on the walls than there are, you know, surfaces for me to put my 3D sculptures on. And so I had to figure out, how do I stay true to being a sculptor, but putting that on the wall, you know? And so that really pushed me to create. And I did that whole 30-day challenge because I knew I didn't have artwork to put on the wall. So come February 1st, I had to have something to put up. I couldn't just put two plant mamas out and be like, hey, check out these cheekbones. Like, no, it wasn't going to be enough. You know what I mean?
This makes me feel better because I'm looking at you doing this, a project a day for 30 days, and then also realizing you're having a show. And in my brain, of course, you know, we all have comparison syndrome on the internet. And so in my brain, you're doing both of these and they're completely separate bodies of work. And I'm thinking, what the heck? Like, you know, because we all look at each other online and of course think everybody else is somehow managing.
In all, you're like, how are you doing this?
I'm so less than, I can't possibly do what they can, all of the things that we tell each other. So I'm really very relieved to know that these were the same thing.
Yeah, I'm a mess too. It's okay. We'll get through it.
This reminds me of a moment like almost 2 years ago when I had Steven on and interviewed him. And I was talking about like the awe I have for his skill set of taking these shapes that go from this beautiful big belly into these tiny little necks. And I was like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was just like, how in the hell do you do that? And he said, well, sometimes it's two pieces. I was like, oh, thank the Lord. Oh, my gosh. Everything else changes.
That's the funniest realization. That's so funny. Yeah. I tell my students that all the time. I'm like, listen, there's no one way to, and they're like, am I doing it right? I'm like, is it how you wanted it to look? Yes or no? There's no right. Unless you're not scratching and attaching, then we got a problem. But otherwise, you're good, you know?
Right. Oh my gosh. I love that. But I mean, outside looking in, this show seems to be a massive success. Yes.
Yes, surprisingly. Yeah, yeah. So separating what happened later on in the night, you know, the impact.
That small thing of getting engaged, just small moment.
Right, but this other side thing that happened. No, the impact that the show was having on the people who were like the folks that work here before it was open to the public, just the impact on the people that I see every day. That was huge for me. They were like, they got the show before I put up my explanation of what the show was about. And the fact that I had the chance to specifically curate the show for this reason, because the other artists, they have work, you know, like they have paintings and stuff that they can put on the wall. So it's not necessarily something they have to make all this work for. But I had the chance to specifically curate the show the way that I wanted it to be. And just hearing that feedback from the people who saw me doing this on a day, like they saw me out in the alley burning a piece of wood, trying to figure out what I was doing. You know what I mean? Like they saw all of that. And so that initial response was really big for me to see that it was actually able to connect with people who saw it was just a piece of wood before, you know? Mm. So that was huge for me. For sure. Yeah. And then the icing is folks connected enough and like decided to take it home with them. They bought pieces. I was like, oh, okay. That's a new thing. People are buying art from me.
Right.
Yeah. Art that's not pottery, that has no function necessarily other than to just make your life aesthetically pleasing. Like that was huge. Yeah.
It's awesome. I feel like when I saw everything, it was like one day I was on Instagram and I saw the engagement announcement. And the next day I came on and started seeing all those sold stickers. And I was like, I don't know where you're going to go. I don't know where you're going to go from here.
A lot happened. I will definitely say that. Last Friday was probably one of the most eventful Fridays of my life. And I was born on a Friday. It was a lot.
So we should probably plan the wedding date for a Friday. Just FYI. I'm just going to make that suggestion. Also, because insider knowledge, Fridays are sometimes cheaper for venue rentals than Saturdays. So you should do it anyways. Just saying.
Hey, all right. Yeah, you know, I'm going to be leaning on you for a lot of it.
Yes. Yeah, we can talk about all that off the record. I've definitely got suggestions for you. But I was really excited to see it because I also just pragmatically am always amazed by how, going back to your statement before about between the functional versus the sculptural and the art, and that, you know, the way it works to show art and sustain that is always fascinating to me in a way of the fact that it does work for people, right? Because,
yeah,
you know, it's a huge deal to be able to take the time it takes to make a beautiful sculptural vase. And then, you know, you have to have all the resources on the front end is what I'm getting. You know, like it feels... And maybe this is why I'm comfortable with functional, because the art feels like so much more of a risk. And I'm still pretty risk averse after 13 years.
Being an entrepreneur, but okay.
I know. I know technically I'm like in the most risk prone career, but I'm still mentally risk averse. And so I'm always just like, how in the world do you like fund making beautiful stuff and then... You just kind of have to hope people buy it. And that's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible faith in your work. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. And I don't have it every day. I'm not going to lie. But what I do have is everything that I make is so true to me. I would have it in my house. Anything I make, I have to make sure that it would fit in my house and that I have space to store it, obviously, because of that other side of, you know, it may not sell. But yeah, no, everything I make, I put that much intention into it to where it's going to connect to a very specific person and it may require some time to find that person. And so that is definitely the downside in terms of like, that's why I even started doing functional things in general. You know what I mean? Because I was like, who's going to connect with all my sculptural pieces? That's a huge gamble. But yeah, this is something that I'm like, if I believe in it strongly enough and I like curate this whole feeling around it, like you go on my page, you get it immediately. You know what I mean? Like if I create the space for that, then I'm calling into to me those people who connect with the things I connect with and building that community. And I mean, you see it, like my community folks are like so awesome. You guys are more excited for me about my show and my engagements. And like, I feel like people here are like, you know, they're like, I can't wait to see it. Can you post it already? You know, I'm like, right. Local people, come to the show because my online friends want to see.
Right. We can't get on a plane right now, but we need, like, I want to get on a plane right now.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting, like, it blends the stuff I talk about in terms of, like, marketing and sales that nobody likes to think about with the, like, the calling in is something that I feel like maybe more people can connect with when pragmatically it overlaps with the fact that you are putting yourself out there and marketing a certain aesthetic that does call in the right people. And the result of that was that you sold work. And you get to make more work and keep working towards where you actually want to go with this.
Right. And it's honestly mind blowing. I'm going to like, I don't think you should say this as the artist who created the artwork, but what sold first, I was like, what? Where is this going to go? Where are you putting it? Can I see your house? Like I had so many questions for my collector. And honestly, a lot of that is just me. Again, the imposter, you know, it's like, I can't believe I just sold this crazy thing that I that came out of my brain. And like, can I see that? Can I install it? I was very curious. And I've shared it already, so I can talk about it. It's called Disconnected, and it's a floating island. So you've probably seen me put that on my story. But I'm like, where in your house are you going to put this thing, this floating island? But he was very proud of the piece, and it connected with him, you know?
Was it suspended from the ceiling?
It was, yeah. There's like a little cutout window kind of style, and I hung it from in between there. So I guess if he has one of those cutouts, then cool, but it's not a typical feature in most homes. So we'll see when I go install it.
I mean, it was beautiful. Maybe he's like a geologist or, you know, like I'm thinking, I don't know. We're not going to.
I have no idea. I mean, so I will say it is definitely an attractive piece. I put it in the front of the show. You cannot miss it.
All right. We'll bring you back for a second recording after you install it so that we can explain how it works. But I mean, this is the. It's funny because my brain always goes to the pragmatic and like you're talking about like where the heck is this going to go? And yet we're in a space that isn't necessarily, you know, the arts doesn't always have to be that way. And people appreciate it for what they appreciate it for. And they're not worried about it. Like one of my like longtime family friends that has known me my whole life, her son is also a potter. And shout out to Linda Moyer, because she's actually down in St. Pete's, so she's not too far away from you.
Ooh,
but she was
okay.
Always saying, she was like, you match the couch to the artwork, not the artwork to the couch. She was like, you pick the art that you want and you can change everything else. I was like, can you tell more people that?
She had her priorities right. That's what that is. I love that.
She also has a son who makes like large installation work. So that
you know what? That is a huge. Yeah. Because I know her house was a museum when he was done.
I feel like there's so many different aspects that are just coming together. And yet you're also still managing in a very real. I hope that people are hearing like you are still managing all the realities of, you know, the full-time job of growing a business, of wanting to take that business full-time and step away from being an employee for somebody and to be able to see your Instagram and see that it's going and it's coming together. And that's, you know, that's why I want to have these conversations at all ranges of the career, because when you're 20 years down the road showcasing in the Met, you know, it's hard for people to realize you had to get through this phase.
Right. Yeah, no, I think for me, that's the biggest thing that really pushed me to continue my art and take it seriously as a business. Because like I said, during the pandemic, so many people were just like, what do we have to lose? Put it out there. And it was healing in a very weird way that people needed. I think we forget how important art is in terms of connecting us to each other. And so for me, just seeing other people who I'm like, oh, that's the accountant from, you know, just regular people going to markets for the first time and like, you know, saying like, I'm selling artisanal soaps or what, you know what I mean? Like people just going out with the entrepreneurial, there we go. That spirit, it really was like, what do I have to lose kind of thing, you know? I'm gonna keep doing clay, I'm gonna keep, you know, this is something I'm committed to. What do I have to lose if I just share it with other people? And the answer was I gained friends, I gained a community of other people who like are interested in that I can talk to and make jokes about scratching and attaching, and they get it. You know what I mean? I'm not just like a weird clay person off to the side. That is really beautiful that, you know, you're able to kind of connect with people that way.
Oh, that's like a mic drop. I'm like, that's the end. I've got all the warm fuzzies. I'm so glad we were finally able to do this. Am I going to see you at Inseca?
Yes. Yes. Are you? Oh my gosh. Are you doing this show there?
We're doing a live podcast taping.
Ooh, yes.
So that's happening. Awesome. That's happening Thursday. I'm looking at the calendar. Thursday, March 16th at 1 p.m. is
okay.
Happening.
Okay,
so,
cool.
And are you? So did you say you're showing?
No. So last year I volunteered and I think I've signed up to volunteer again this year. So I'll be around, you know, hanging out in my volunteer vest.
So we'll be able to find you.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's how I found friends last year. They were like, are you Chaos Creator? I was like, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm so excited. I also have always such aggressive FOMO for events like this because I know that a lot of things happen like outside the schedule. So just add me to the group text, please.
Of course, you gotta come.
Because Like, I already know Diana and Rich are probably planning something that I'm like, can I get an invite?
Of course. You know that. Yeah. We're doing our bowl swap. It's going to be a good time. I'm very excited. I don't think after my experience last year, I could have been allowed to not come this year. I think Diana and Rich would have like really found a way to get me there. So
that's awesome.
I'm very excited to be going.
I can't wait. It's going to be so surreal. Like, having experienced this community online for 2 years, to meet in person for the first time, it's just going to be
like you're a real person.
Wow, you're real short.
I know. I spent the first 2 hours like poking Diana, like, you're real.
I love it. Amazing. All right. Well, we've talked about the Instagram handle, but let's say, I'm assuming that's the best place to send everybody on the internet.
Yes, everybody on the internet. Everything's tagged Chaos Creates. So that's Chaos with a K. K-H-A-O-S Creates. But yeah, that's Facebook, Instagram, all the things say that. So
all the things. Perfect. And we will put a link in the show notes.
Yay. Awesome.
And that wraps up episode 334 here on the podcast. If you are listening along in real time, then you know that this week, many of us have descended upon Cincinnati, Ohio for the 57th annual NSECA conference. And I know bunches of people talking about a conference can make the FOMO feelings rise up for so many of us. If you are not going to NSECA, know that I understand. I had all of those feelings of fear of missing out last year, and will no doubt have them come back to me in the future when there's a time that we can't attend as well. Being able to travel to a new location, pay to stay in a hotel or an Airbnb, pay for a conference ticket, even if it's a reasonable price, and food and drinks for the week, well, it clearly takes a lot of resources. Not to mention, it can be limiting because of simple geographical realities. We're going this year because we can drive there. It might take us 7 hours to drive there. We can do it. All this to say, if all the NSECA talk has you longing for connection with other makers, if it's making you feel like you've been left out of a group hangout and the uniquely deep conversations that you can have, specifically when you're in a room full of people who do what you do and love sticking their hands in mud like you do, and you don't have to explain why that is, please do consider joining us over inside of the community. At $27 a month, it is a much easier financial commitment than the thousands of dollars you might need to support a week-long trip for a multi-day conference. Not to mention, your membership directly supports the creation of this very podcast. You can learn more and have a little peek around with a 2-week free trial, so no risk, at makersplaybook.com/community. Speaking of supporting the podcast, thank you once again to our sponsor, Amoco.
Hello, I'm Jeff, Executive Vice President here at Amoco Brent. Over 100 years ago, my grandfather founded Amoco. Today, my brother and I carry on his legacy. Our team works diligently to bring you the best clays, glazes, equipment, and more for your studio and a classroom. This week's episode is brought to you by Amoco Brent. Please find your favorite Amoco or Brent product at your local distributor today. Thank you for choosing Amoco for all your clay and glaze needs.
Additionally, audio post-production of this podcast is made possible by help from Christy Kotzfan with promotional material assistance from Queenie Malachy. The Maker's Playbook podcast is recorded on the original homelands of the Potawatomi, Ho-Chunk, and Menominee people, where the people of Wisconsin's sovereign Anishinaabe, Ho-Chunk, Menominee, Oneida, and Mohican nations remain present. Until next time, my friends, go get back to making your dreams a reality. Because together, we've got this.